to present our latest work here. In the next hour or so, what I would like to give you an idea of is what almost quantum correlations are and why it is important to try to understand them and how this no restriction hypothesis comes into the play. So this is joint work that I have with Yelena Gurianova, Antonio Asina, Miguel Navasquez. So just as a heads up for the end of the talk, after your questions, I have another thing that I'm also going to talk about. So I'll just keep that there for you to be curious about and not leave the room until that happens. But now let's just focus on this. So let me start a little bit with Bell scenarios just to set the grounds of where we are and then move on to what this whole paper is about. And somehow motivate in a not really chronological way what almost quantum correlations are. So let's start with the Bell scenario. So in the Bell scenario, the situation is the following. We have two parties, Alice and Bob, and there is some source here that prepares a system, sends a part to Alice, some part to Bob, you know, distributes it in some way. And now Alice and Bob want to perform measurements on that system, their part of the system, and obtain outcomes. And what they're interested in is how correlated those outcomes are, depending on the measurement choices. So this is the setup that you need to have in mind for the whole purpose of the talk. And now notice that when I defined this, I just used the word system, but I actually didn't specify what the system was about. And I only measured, I only mentioned the fact that there were measurements performed in the systems and outcomes obtained from them. But that's the only information that I gave you. That's the only information that we used in order to define what the situation was about. So it's kind of free. We don't really have any assumptions in the back of our head on how these devices operate, how those measurements are performed, or what the nature of the system that the source produces is. So the only operational constraint that we have in the setup is the fact that Alice and Bob, we think of them as being in separate labs, distant to each other, and so they cannot communicate. They are very far separated, and so they cannot exchange any classical information during the duration of the experiment. And that is mathematically encoded in these constraints. So the marginal of Alice's conditional probability distribution is well defined in the sense that it doesn't depend on Bob's choice of measurement, and vice versa. So now, when we want to study what are the possible correlations that these parties can observe in their experimental data, this is operationally the only constraint that will, at first, tell us what are the possible subset of correlations that we might observe. But now I can take a step further and say, well, what happens if now we start thinking about these systems being classical systems or quantum systems? And that is how classical and quantum correlations come up. So if everything in this experimental setup is classical or behaves classically, then the correlations that these parties can observe are the ones that are usually referred to, well, there are many different names for these correlations. One that people seem to try to promote lately is the use of a classical common cause that explains those correlations that links to the talks that we were listening to yesterday. And also, if you come from a more information theory angle to quantum foundations, then you think of these correlations as the one that you can produce with local operations and shared randomness. And historically, these are the ones that have an explanation as local hidden variable models. Excuse me. So those are the classical correlations. Now, quantum correlations that those can be explained when Alice and Bob perform measurements on a shared quantum state. So we have a quantum system in a state rho, and Alice and Bob perform measurements, and the statistic that they observe is given by Born's rule. So notice that here we say that correlations have a quantum explanation whenever there exists a state and measurements that explains them, regardless of how they were produced to begin with. So that is the very basic definition of a Bell scenario. And now what we want to focus is on these correlations. What we want to do is we want to understand how these quantum correlations arise. So given a correlation, if we can understand if it has a quantum model or not, for instance. So that's the questions that are in our mind throughout this paper. And there are many different reasons why you would like to understand this correlation. So on the one hand, if you are focused very on foundational aspect of quantum theory, you can think of, as Lucien was saying yesterday, that one is looking for another theory that might recover quantum theory in one limit and general relativity on the other limit. So it's conceivable that the correlations that may exist in nature go a little bit beyond what quantum correlations are. So one reason to try to understand what are the possible correlations that arise in nature is also to somehow assist this search for a theory that supersedes quantum. But also, if you have a more information theoretic approach to quantum foundations, you might already have read that correlations pose as a resource for information tasks. For instance, correlations between Alice and Bob that are non-local, so that have no classical explanation, pose as a resource, say, for quantum cryptography, like quantum key distribution or quantum randomness generation. So it's also good to understand these quantum correlations, not just as a possibility, but also as a resource that has limitations. So we want to understand not just the possibilities, but also the limitations that these quantum resources bring into the picture. So to give you just a depiction of the situation that I was posing before, here we have just a pictorial representation of the space of probability distributions, conditional probability distributions between Alice and Bob. And in this very big area here, I've depicted pictorially the ones that satisfy the operational constraints of no signaling. And here, in this dark gray area, are the ones that have a classical explanation. And then, in this green area, I represent the quantum correlations, the set of correlations that have a quantum explanation. But let me remark that this is just a depiction in the sense that we don't really know what the quantum boundary is. That's one of the open questions that we're trying to answer. We do know what the boundary of the classical set is and what the boundary of this no signaling one is, but we are not certain of what the complete boundary of the quantum correlations are. And that's one of the questions that we're trying to tackle. So since people want to try to understand these correlations as a resource for information tasks, one of the angles that they used to try to understand this boundary is to now find an axiomatization of these quantum correlations. What do I mean by that? The idea is to come up with some physical principles that when you impose those physical principles on top of the known signaling one that I was referring to in the previous slide, then the only correlations that are compatible with all of those are the quantum ones. So that's what people have been trying to do for the past decade or so, or 2 decades, actually. And just to name a few, those of you who were here last year must have heard me talk about the consistent exclusivity principle, which depicts, so constrains a little bit more this a set of allowed correlations, but not as much as to actually single out the quantum one. And actually, it's not even convex, so there's no hope in that recovering that. But the best approximation to the quantum set that we have right now is a principle called microscopic non-contextuality. And the purpose of this talk is not to actually get into what these principles are and how to motivate and define them, but just to give you an idea of what goes around people's minds when we think about this problem. So this principle here just defines a macroscopic version of a Bell experiment and just asks that correlations have a classical explanation in this macroscopic limit. But that's the best approximation so far that we have to the quantum set. And that's where almost quantum correlations come into this talk. The set of correlations that are captured by that macroscopic non-contextuality principle is precisely a set that was previously found and called almost quantum. These almost quantum correlations started with the MPI hierarchy. So their original definition is in terms of the relaxation of the set of quantum correlations that can be defined as a semi-definite program. So testing membership to the almost quantum set is something that you can do quite efficiently. And then it was rediscovered in different scenarios. And at the end of the day, in this Nature Communications paper, this set of correlations was given a proper name and established as such. And so far, all the attempts that we've had, even the best one that we've had to try to characterize quantum correlations, had ended up characterizing the almost quantum one. So here I want to give you an interpretation of how you might think of this almost quantum set. It's not the mathematical definition in the sense that this is a way to rephrase its original definition in terms of the language of quantum theory, which is something that we may be a bit more used to in this audience. But don't take this as the actual interpretation of what the almost quantum correlations are. It's just a disclaimer. So if we have some correlations observed by Alice and Bob, we say that these correlations have an almost quantum model, so they belong to the almost quantum set. If there exists a Hilbert space, a normalized quantum state, a projective measurement for Alice, and a projective measurement for Bob, such that the correlations are recovered via the Bohm's rule, the way that we were mentioning before. But now the projectors have the property that they commute on the state. So if we drop the state here and we impose that condition on the projectors, so forget about this side here, then that's precisely the definition of quantum correlations. But now by adding this fine-tuning here, we relax the set of quantum correlations and actually recover the set of almost quantum correlations. So that's to give you an idea of how similar you can almost quantum correlations behave mathematically respect to the quantum correlations, and it's one of the reasons why it's been so difficult to try to find a difference between these two sets, the set of quantum and almost quantum. Yeah?
Is H finite dimensional?
Yes, so here we're thinking about finite dimensional Hilbert spaces. So I'm not going to get anywhere near Searleton's problem in this talk. Mm-hmm. So, we have almost quantum correlations, and there's a gap there. We know there's a gap, because we know of correlations that have an almost quantum model but do not have a quantum model. So the question now is, how can we tell those two sets apart? Is there a physical principle that rules out some correlations in this area there? And yes?
Is there a simple example of an almost quantum correlation?
Well, I'm not entirely sure how to define simple. But for instance, if you take the CHSH scenario, are you familiar with the CHSH scenario? And you take the point that saturates the quantum value of CHSH, so the correlation has 2√2. We know that there's only one correlation that is quantum and that achieves that value. Mm-hmm. Now, you can take that correlation and change a little bit the marginals, such that that new conditional probability distribution will achieve Searleton's bound. However, since it has different marginals, it does not have a quantum realization. That's, I don't know if that's simple, but that's an example. So yeah, so the idea is to try to see how to somehow from basic axioms or postulates tell those two sets apart. And so far, in these past few years, we've tried to tackle this problem from this device-independent paradigm, basically just trying to find or define postulates in terms of the correlations alone without taking into account the theory that gives rise to those close correlations, which is an approach motivated from this information theoretic approach or motivation to try to understand the limitations of these quantum correlations. But given that that avenue hasn't been so fruitful in the past 5 years, we decided to bring in a new ingredient into this, trying to find this solution, which is combining our problem with device-dependent principles, that is, principles that depend on the theory that predicts that correlations rather than the correlations themselves. And this is not the first time that people bring device-dependent principles on the table. So, for instance, a few years ago, when this whole consistent exclusivity principle came up, some people started trying to motivate this principle, which is device-independent, by deriving it from device-dependent principle. But this is the first time that instead of trying to motivate a device-independent principle from device-dependent ones, we're just trying to go straight to the set of correlations. So now, the problem that we have at the moment is that we don't really have a theory that predicts almost quantum correlations. So what I will try to do in the rest of the talk is to present you with the general framework in which we will think of theories that give rise to correlations, and how to, even though we don't have a fully formed theory that is compatible with almost quantum correlations, we can still explore the properties that such a theory, if they exist, would have. So, general probabilistic theories. This was mentioned a few times yesterday. So I'm not going to give a tutorial or any of the sort on GPTs, but let me, in this slide, state the basics that we will use to state our results.
May I just, before going to this, can you give a little more motivation why one will look? We can define this, it's kind of definable, but this is why is to look for this?
Why to look for?
It's almost quantum.
Okay. I mean, there's no particular reason to study almost quantum. What we want to study is, or we want to understand is, the limitations of quantum.
So you give one which is not and trying to why it's not good?
I'm sorry?
So you take one example which is not and trying to show why it's not good?
Yeah, somehow our attempt to fully characterize the set of quantum correlations from basic principles has always ended up characterizing almost quantum correlations instead. We haven't been able to find a principle that almost quantum correlations violate. That's why people have somehow focused on trying to understand the properties of almost quantum correlations, because somehow that's the wall that we hit. So that's the motivation for ruling them out. But the whole purpose is to try to understand what are the fundamental principles that give rise to quantum correlations, so that in the so since we are expecting almost quantum quantum theory potentially not to be the full theory that describes nature, then that might give us some room or which principles of quantum should be given away or should be discarded if you want to now explain those potentially new correlations that you may have access to from a theory of, say, quantum gravity.
Okay,
That's somehow the idea. Okay, so to try to understand or explore these device-dependent principles in a non-Poromaa quantum correlations, we worked on this generalized probabilistic theories framework. So just to summarize very, very shortly, in these GPTs, what we basically provides a framework to try to define systems, the states for those systems, and the effects that you want to act on those systems. I'm not considering transformations for the purpose of this paper, but in the general framework, you can also study them. And the framework is tailored at understanding the statistical properties of such a theory. So in a GPT, you have system types that, so different systems of different types and different, and you also have a set of rules on how to compose those systems. For instance, in quantum theory, you have Hilbert space of some dimension, and then you have some tensor product to combine them. So this would be the analog of that way of reasoning in the quantum formalism. Then a GPT also gives you the possibility to define states for those system types. So here by S, I will denote the set of states, and by this size, without the kets, I will denote the states that belong to the set of states. And you can think of them as a vector of possibly infinite dimension that tells you what are the outcomes of the probability of the outcomes of any possible measurement that you can perform on that system. That's the way that you can think of the information that this system is, that state encodes. And in quantum theory, such an object would be, for instance, a density matrix that gives us all the information about the statistical properties of the state of the system. And then the last ingredient is effects. So effects are linear functionals that take a state of your system and assign it a number between 0 and 1, which is basically a probability assignment to each of the state of the system. And in quantum theory, for instance, that would be a POVM element, that is a positive semi-definite matrix that is between 0 and the identity. So those are the ingredients that we have. And just something that is somehow implicit in people's mind, but let me just say it explicitly, is that then a measurement will be composed by a collection of effects such that when you sum over all the elements of that set and you sum all the probabilities that they assign to a particular state, that would be one. The probabilities will be normalized. And that should hold for any possible state. So we have a collection of effects. Those effects assign probabilities to a state. And then that assignment of probabilities should be normalized. And that should hold for any state that you could have picked to begin with. Now, if we think, let's just try to now focus on the relationship between the set of states and the set of effects. If we only think of the linear functionals that give an assignment of values between 0 and 1 to the set of states, then the set of linear functionals that have that property is actually the dual of this set, so S star. So the set of effects is a subset, potentially strict, of the dual of the set of states. Now, the no-restriction hypothesis tells you that actually the two sets are equivalent. So what does it say, like, physically? Well, if you have some linear functional that gives a value between 0 and 1 to any possible state, then that linear functional should correspond to a measurement in your physical theory. So everything that is mathematically allowed should be physically implementable. That's what the no-restriction hypothesis says. And that is what a vanilla version of a quantum theory satisfies. And any almost quantum theory or any theory that would have the almost quantum correlations of the set of predicted correlations cannot satisfy. And that's what we've proven in this, that's what the result in this talk is. So let me now show you or give you an idea of how, by using this framework of GPTs and trying to combine that with the correlations that I defined before, if this null restriction hypothesis holds, then we get a contradiction. So for that, first I need to introduce you or to walk you through a very particular set of effects, or in other words, a particular set of measurements. And for that, let me start with something that most of us must be familiar with, which is a Bell inequality. So pick your favorite Bell inequality. For instance, this one here is CHSH. And CHSH, for instance, has this upper bound of 2 and lower bound of -2 for classical correlations. And you can go and do the computation and find that the maximum and minimum value that you can get when you evaluate that expression for almost quantum correlations is actually 2 square root of 2. So now, just walk with me here. Take your favorite inequality and now rewrite it. So do some algebraic calculations, including some normalization constraints, blah, blah, blah. And you can always rewrite it in this way, as an equivalent linear combination of the elements of your probability vector that will give values between 0 and 1 for almost quantum correlations. And that is what those coefficients of inequality rewritten in that way is what we will refer to as a normalized Bell functional. And now let me explain you how these normalized Bell functionals give rise to a particular set of effects. So let's start here. So we have SAB, which is the set of states for the joint systems of Alice and Bob. These are effects for Alice, and these are effects for Bob. And the collection of this for a fixed x, when you take all of them over A, that is the measurement for each x. And similarly for Bob, when you fix y. And the probabilities in the GPT formalism arise like that. We have the effect on Alice's side, composed with that on Bob's side, acting on the state of the joint system. And now let's take this normalized Bell functional from the previous slide and rewrite it. So now we've replaced the probability by this formula there. And this holds, these two inequalities hold for all the states of Alice and Bob, all the measurements in Alice's side, and all the measurements in Bob's side. So now let's take a step further and define this new effect, W, as this sum here. Once we've done that, then the value that this effect W assigns to the joint state always lies between 0 and 1. And that is true for all joint states of Alice and Bob. So namely, this W there is a linear functional that belongs to the dual of the set of states of Alice and Bob. And that is true for all possible effects and measurements in Alice and Bob's side. And now the non-restriction hypothesis tells you, well, yeah, that is a measurement that you can implement in the lab. So this is a horrible slide, and I'm pretty sure I kind of lost most of you by now. So let me try to be more friendly. And that's in words. So when we take a normalized Bell functional, that induces a map from a set of measurements in Bob's side and a set of measurements in Alice's side to a joint linear functional for the two parties that the no-restriction hypothesis renders as a valid effect for the joint party. So that is the way that we will think of a normalized Bell functional. So a normalized Bell functional gives rise to a valid joint measurement for Alice and Bob. That's the take-home message of this slide and the previous one. Okay, I hope I brought you back with this. Because now things get a little bit more complicated. So now let's move on to the setup that we use to try to derive this contradiction. Well, to derive the contradiction, actually. But let's take Alice and Bob, like before. And now let's take a collection of these effects that are induced by a normalized Bell functional. So we take a collection of Bell functionals and we take the effects that those Bell functionals give you. And this each Bell functional or effect corresponding to a Bell functional, we have two indices, alpha and xi, I think that's called. And for xi, then this collection over alpha will be a valid measurement. So you can do that. You can just ask a computer, give me a set of effects, joint effects for Alice and Bob, that display this property. So you can take that.
Are they all coming ultimately from the same normalized Bell functional?
No, each of those arises from a different Bell functional. And now, just to make things a little bit more interesting / complicated, let's add Charlie to the picture. And now we will think of a Bell experiment between Charlie versus Alice and Bob. So we have Alice and Bob acting as one party. They receive a choice of measurement, xi. They implement it by the corresponding collection of Bell functionals, or the effects arising from Bell functionals, and they obtain a null-count alpha. And then Charlie, in his share of the system, performs a measurement labeled by z and obtains an outcome z. And these are the correlations that we're interested in. The probability of obtaining alpha and c, given that we've measured c and z. Now, if we remember where these correlations came from, we have that can be expressed as this effect, joint effect for Alice and Bob, and that single party effect for Charlie acting on the state of the system that they share. And now if we go back and write these effects as the expression that corresponds to the normalized Bell functional that gave rise to them, we can actually understand these correlations in that way. So we have an expression of the correlations, the bipartite correlations that Alice, Bob, and Charlie can generate when Alice and Bob team up as a combination, a linear combination of tripartite correlations in a normal tripartite Bell scenario that we are all used to dealing with. So somehow we take correlations in a tripartite Bell scenario, we take some linear combination of them, and we generate some new correlations by putting Alice and Bob together and thinking of them as a single part. Now, the important step is the following. If these correlations are almost quantum, so if the theory that explains the correlations in the experiments is an almost quantum theory, then this would be an almost quantum correlation because we have almost quantum effects in an almost quantum state. And this thing here will also be an almost quantum correlation because it arises by performing almost quantum states in almost quantum measurements in an almost quantum state. And this is an almost quantum measurement because the no restriction hypothesis told us that that is an almost quantum measurement. But now is where the contradiction arises. Now that you've reached this point is when you can start building up a counterexample to this situation. And the counterexample comes from the following particular case. So just take the case where x and y have three values, and all the other classical variables in the setup have binary values. Then what you can prove is that there exists a tripartite correlation, which is an almost quantum one, And a collection of normalized real functions that you can plug here, such that the correlation that you obtain between the partition Charlie's versus Alice Bob is not almost quantum. But we know from the previous slide that if this is almost quantum, and these are almost quantum measurements, then this is almost quantum. Therefore, any almost quantum theory must violate the non-restriction hypothesis. So there must be, so if you're thinking of coming up with a theory that gives rise to almost quantum theory, to almost quantum correlations, then that theory needs to come equipped with some superselection rules or some reasons why certain linear functionals cannot be rendered as physical measurements that you can perform in the lab. Otherwise, you will end up in a situation where the theory is not closed under composition. So that's what I wanted to tell you today. Basically, I try to walk you through the reasoning and the setup and the logic on how to show or how to see that these almost quantum correlations, when you think of them as coming from an almost quantum theory, then that theory should violate the non-restriction hypothesis if we want everything to be consistent. And this is actually the first time that we have a fundamental difference between quantum and almost quantum. It's a kind of an indirect difference because we had to go through a hypothetical theory that may or may not exist and then try to see what are the difference between the two theories, and that might give a difference in the two sets of correlations. But it's a difference nonetheless that we didn't have before. So that's the take-home message. There are fundamental differences between quantum and almost quantum. And in order to pinpoint or to identify this first difference between these two, we had to bring into the table device-dependent principles, and it was not done through device-independent ones. So there are many open questions from now on, and these are just two of the many that I thought that might be relevant for the audience. So the first one is, well, can we combine this fact that we just proven, that almost quantum correlations cannot come from a theory that satisfies the non-restriction hypothesis, and combine that with some device-independent principle, and with that combination single out the set of quantum correlations or not? And there's also this question that has been going through my mind for the past few years of whether there might be actually a limitation, a fundamental limitation in the device-independent approach, that if you want to identify a difference, a physical difference between the set of quantum and almost quantum correlations, that you might have to start considering or taking ingredients from the relative theories, and you might not be able, for whatever reason, to do it in just a device-independent way. So whether there's a fundamental limitation or not, I think that's a very interesting question, at least for me, that I would love to hear an answer to that. And thanks so much for your attention.
I
just wanted this question that you're raising, the combination of principles.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it not obvious that it is immediately possible to just combine?
I mean, you can, if you combine, for instance, macroscopic non-contextuality and the fact that you can recover that you want a theory that satisfies no restriction, what you do is you rule out almost quantum. But that doesn't single out quantum. It could be that there is a subset of the almost quantum correlations that it's still outside the quantum set, which is compatible with all those. It's conceivable. It might not be the case, but the fact that you ruled out almost quantum doesn't mean that you've managed to bridge the gap completely. Perhaps you got a little bit closer, but not all the way to the boundary.
Maybe there's a gap in that misunderstanding. Something that confuses me. So
I think imagine for almost quantum correlation, it's important that the projector of Alice and Bob, they don't commute, because if they commute, then you get quantum correlation. Is that right?
Okay. That's why I gave the disclaimer when I was in that slide. So what I presented was an interpretation of the set of almost quantum correlations using the quantum language. But that doesn't mean that an almost quantum theory should display the feature of the commutation of projectors that I was mentioning.
I see. So later on, when you present GPT, the commute.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But the fact that if you want to use the current formalism of quantum theory, then the way to explain the correlations is by asking for the relaxing the commutation relationship between the projectors. But the fact that you need to do that to use the language of quantum theory to explain the set doesn't mean that that's a fundamental feature that the set has. That's why I said a disclaimer that is you shouldn't like try to make physical conclusions based on that particular reading of the set. The set has a mathematical definition that is independent of that interpretation of rephrasing.
Yes, a follow-up question, since there is this quantum language. In this language, the projectors don't commute, so that, like, to quantum field theorists, this might suggest that you can signal. So I wonder how does that interact with the no signaling assumption?
Almost quantum correlations are non-signaling, so even if you have this...
So even if they don't commute, you can...
Yeah, because the thing is that... Okay, so you have an almost quantum correlation, and that almost quantum correlation is almost quantum if you can find a state and measurements with those properties that give rise to them. But that's a fine-tuned explanation of the correlation using the quantum language. So the fact that, so if you change the state, yeah, you might signal. But the particular state that you're measuring on with these measurements that do not commute is such that no signaling is allowed. No signaling is allowed, yeah. So there's like some fine-tuning going there.
I have a comment about your last question. I think that there are examples of theories where the pairs of theories where the correlations that you can get are exactly the same, but they are different theories. So I think this is one of the limitations of the device independent principle, because you cannot understand everything about the theory just looking at correlations that you can get. And I think that the point with almost quantum correlations is, in this respect, is related to the non-restriction hypothesis, because this sets a very strong constraint on a set of states of the theory. Because what you're requiring is that any positive function on a set of states of a system is an effect of the theory.
Mm-hmm.
But then suppose that you have a bipartite state and you apply the local effect, what you steer might not be a state anymore. So you're requiring that the products of these positive functionals are still positive on the set of bipartite states. So I think that this is a mathematical feature of quantum theory that you can understand looking at the way in which systems compose, and not only at correlations. So I think that this is the reason why there is this gap of understanding of the difference between the quantum correlations and the almost quantum ones.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that you can introduce the concept of transformation in this picture to generalize the analysis of the device-independent principles encompassing transformations instead of only states and effects? Because I think this would be the way to look at it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we wanted to... So that's one of the follow-up things that we're trying to do. So here, since it was enough to take states and measurements to find the contradiction, we only focused on that. And now, yeah, another avenue that we're exploring is if you consider states, measurements, and transformations, if there are other properties of the theories that have clear, straightforward consequences to rule out, for instance, almost quantum. Because some people sometimes don't have strong opinions towards or against null restriction. So we're trying to pursue this other avenue and like explore device-dependent principles that people might find more fundamental than the null restriction one.
Questions. So, so it was a very nice talk, but I wanted to ask, since there were the renormalized Bell functionals into effect, is it known that almost quantum correlations give the same bounds for Bell inequalities? Because since there are two different convex sets, there should be some separation functionals separating these two. So,
yes. So there is there are Bell inequalities. So CHSH has the same maximum value for quantum and almost quantum. But there are many other inequalities that have different values for the two sets. So the maximum value that you get for almost quantum is different from the maximum value that you get from quantum. That's a known fact, and that's actually how you can tell that the two sets are different, right? By doing some explorations with the inequalities and checking that something is contained strictly on the other. But how to take those inequalities and transform them into some kind of physical principle, or like see if those one of those inequalities has some interpretation, like more deeper meaning, that's a different question. I don't know how to do that.
So I'm not sure if I can phrase the questions in a way that I wanted to, but in short, can you do the same proof without invoking a child? So entirely restricting yourself to a bipartite, you know?
I'm not entirely sure it's possible, because somehow if you only think of Alice and Bob, this whole recipe tells you how to have a joint effect for Alice and Bob. Now the contradiction comes when you want to use that joint effect that is supposed to be physically realizable in another network, in another setup. So like single party experiments, if I'm not wrong, have always some sort of explanation. So it's only when you try to compose that with another party that you start seeing contradictions.
Right. I mean, if I'm to play devil's advocate, I might say that maybe it's not a problem of no restriction. Maybe the problem is not with the no restriction hypothesis. Maybe it's just with the way you're trying to extend that to a multipartite scenario. And maybe that's where the problem comes in.
The thing is that we never...
almost quantum theory and the tripartite almost quantum theory, they may not be able to just fit in like this.
Okay, I think I understand the question better now, but... we haven't actually specified what is the way that you compose systems.
Yes. Okay.
So we've only assumed that there exists a theory that has some recipe on how these systems are composed. So if you have an almost quantum theory that is not equipped just with a single party states and effects, it also comes equipped with rules on how to compose things, whether it's like a bipartite versus tripartite composition. I think that, those are the assumptions that we made, that such a thing exists. I don't know. Okay, we can talk a bit later about, a bit more later, but yeah, we've used a tripartite state there, so that might be perhaps something that we can relax.
I've seen a few hands on the back of the room.
So, do you assume that the tripartite probability distribution is produced by sort of the tripartite version of almost quantum correlations? This no restriction hypothesis, I mean, is there anything guaranteeing that you can, maybe you need a global measurement on Alice and Bob to produce this functional that you're trying to...
Yeah.
To get this, why could you, maybe you cannot get this two-partite probability distribution by doing some fancy marginal on the tripartite.
Well, that's actually what this line is for. That line tells you that you can. So that bipartite distribution comes from taking this global measurement in Alice and Bob and this local measurement for Charlie. And then this global measurement is related to local measurements in Alice and Bob's site by these coefficients of normalizable functionals. So these steps are the ones that tell you that this bipartite correlation that should be almost quantum given that this the Weyl functionals give rise to actual almost quantum measurements, that is related to an almost quantum tripartite correlation. Because that is just single measurements on a tripartite state.
It seems like the structure of your almost quantum correlations doesn't show up until the very end of your argument. Is that true? Like in the green font?
Yeah. So far, I mean, it's just these features are general for any for any theory.
So I guess you could use this to test other levels of the MPA hierarchy?
Yes.
Did you try doing that?
No.
Okay. It's like maybe every level of the MPA hierarchy has some kind of correlation.
It would be really nice to find such a property. This is somehow the first level, so to say, of MPA, or it's 1+AB, but like one of the very, very outer ones. And we did all this numerically. So in order to find this example here, we did this search numerically. So if we had analytic versions of how this search could be, then perhaps you could generalize that to other levels. That would be amazing. It would be really good to have that. But at least with the way that we found the contrary example, that's you cannot generalize it to other levels.
I was thinking if every level of the MPA hierarchy has one of these such examples, and let's, you know, personal arguments aside, let's suppose the MPA hierarchy converges onto the quantum set. Then maybe another way to describe the quantum set is a maximization over all theories that do satisfy no restriction of
options. Yeah. That would be really good. That would be a really good thing to have. But for that, we will need a recipe to find to prove that such a contrary example exists in every single MPA level. And the way I don't know how to do that because of the particular way that we looked for in this level. But that would be a really good thing to have. I haven't thought much about it. I tried at the very beginning, and then when I saw it was not trivial, I was like, okay, I should dedicate more time on this.
So this example doesn't give you any direction on that?
No, no. But it would be really good to if that would work out.
We still have a bit of time.
So a few questions. First, I'm quite sure that the alpha and chi you have you have a normalized Weyl functional that's one effect. To take the effective measurement, are you just subtracting from the identity effect? Is everything binary, or is there a more complicated recipe? How are you going from an effect to a measurement?
From an effect to a measurement?
Yes. It's just, so everything's binary and it's just one minus. Yeah. Okay. The Weyl functionals that you used, it was pointed out that some Weyl functionals do not display a quantum almost quantum gap. Mm-hmm. Do you require the Weyl functionals in the proof to have an almost quantum gap?
We don't require that. Some of them do.
Can you speculate, or do you think that's a necessary ingredient to tell them that?
I haven't thought of that.
And lastly, it looks to me like it's a non-convex optimization, in the sense that you've got this product of a tripartite correlation with a bipartite correlation, and you do some sort of summation over some of the indices. Mm-hmm. How did you actually implement that?
Oh, we did some... Yeah, numerics were non-trivial. So we were trying, it was like some kind of seesaw. So we had a way to parametrizing all these different things, like the Bell inequalities and the things. And then we would optimize over the state, then we would optimize over this, and then optimize over the state, and then try to go up and go beyond the set of almost quantum. That that's why it took us over 2 years to find a counterexample.
You can pick one last question and then you're on the last
Yeah.
Is that like a last burning question or do we do that at Cosmic Break?
No?
Okay.
Okay, so I can go to the second part of my talk, which might be a bit more exciting. So I just want to announce a workshop, quantum information workshop, that is happening in November in Florianópolis, Brazil. So these are all our amazing sponsors, which have supported us so much that we do have a considerable generous amount for travel grants. So if any of you, potentially students or early career researchers that are interested, just let us know. All of you who may not fit in that window but still are interested, please do come. The idea is to try to make this a very nice event. And let me in 1 minute tell you why you should come here. So not only because of the beautiful picture and the one that I will show in the next slide, but also, so Q-Turn is not just yet another quantum information series, but we do have the novelty that our, so the workshop will display the normal feature of invited talks and contributed talks, but some of those contributed invited talks will constitute an awareness program. So we will not only cover topics of the quantum information research, but we will also have some invited talks that will provide information and generate some discussions on topics that touch us as a research community, such as diversity, health, mental health, and workers' rights, just to name a few. So the idea is not just to have a scientific program, but also create a room to discuss among all of us these issues that we experience as a community and potential ways to try to look at the future and come up with some preliminary ways to tackle these issues. So that's the novelty of this particular quantum information series. So I hope that I've sold it right and that you're even more interested in coming now, besides the fact that it's in Brazil. And it's a team effort, so it's not just me. So there's a bunch of people from different parts of the world who are involved in making this happen and making this workshop a reality. And that's yet another picture of Florianópolis. And things that you need to keep in mind is deadlines. So submissions for either contributed talks or posters are now at the end of August, so you have a month to think of a 3-page abstract to submit. And the application for travel support is 1 week afterwards, to give you a little bit of time to prepare both. And we have different registration deadlines. One if it's at the end of August, end of September, end of October. And if you want to know a bit more about it, you can check the website. All the information is there. And we will keep updating it through also our social media, Facebook and Twitter, about when the registrations open, when the submission open, and how all this develops. Mm-hmm. So if you have any questions, feel free to contact me if you want, or there's also the email address for the workshop. And looking forward to seeing you all in Brazil at the end of the year.